My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Do you feel and experience the world more deeply than others? Can you feel the emotions of others, both positive and negative? Are you the person that friends, family, and even strangers turn to, sharing their problems and seeking your excellent listening skills and compassion? Do you often feel ill without explanation? Do you have excellent intuitive abilities and can predict and sense things before they happen? Do you have a deep love for nature and animals? Do you find yourself uncomfortable in crowded, noisy places? If you answered yes to these questions, you are an empath. And my guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Raven Digitalis, knows well what it means to be an empath and shares his wisdom in his new book, Esoteric Empathy, a Magical and Metaphysical Guide to Emotional Sensitivity. Raven is also the author of Shadow Magic Compendium, Planetary Spells and Rituals, and Gothcraft. He's a neo-pagan priest and co-founder of an Eastern Hellenistic non-profit multicultural temple called Opus Ima Obscuri. Also trained in Eastern philosophies and Georgian witchcraft, Raven has been an earth-based practitioner since 1999, a priest since 2003, a Freemason since 2012, and an empath all his life. You could visit him online at ravendigitalis.com. Please welcome Raven Digitalis. Good evening, Raven.
Greetings. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Now, I have to start right off by asking you how you adopted the name Raven Digitalis. I can understand Raven, but why Digitalis and not its more poetic name, Foxgloves?
Well, I figured that Smith wasn't the best author name to have after Raven. But actually, long before I started writing books, I went on a type of a spiritual and astral journey to discover my plant ally and my animal ally. And the plant ally was Foxglove. But Foxglove is a little too common of a name. Digitalis seemed to resonate with me a little more, which is, of course, its Latin name. And I hope to actually grow some in the garden this year.
You know, when you think of digitalis, at least I do in my generation, you think of heart medications, which are derived from that plant. So that's why I was questioning that.
Yeah, and I didn't actually know about that medication until after I was published and someone said, why did you name yourself after a heart medication? I'm like, heart medication? What are you talking about?
So please tell us about your early life, your first indications of being an empath, and your introduction to the magical practices.
Well, I was born and raised here in Missoula, Montana. Beautiful place, except for when it's the dead of winter and 30 degrees below and icy roads. But that's behind us now because it's springtime. But it's a beautiful place. I just love living here in Montana. It's not too populated and so much natural world. We experience all four seasons. It's a wonderful place to be, yet I love to travel. So I was born and raised here and was educated here at the University of Montana in anthropology. My family is not necessarily spiritual. They don't have any particular beliefs or disbeliefs, and really encouraged me to discover the world spiritually and philosophically, as long as I was being good and being safe. And of course, as a rebellious teenager, getting into magic and witchcraft and alternative spirituality and alternative healing, some eyebrows were raised, but in the end, I've been very positively encouraged by family and have discovered amazing circles of friends and community as a result.
That's wonderful that you were encouraged, because there are so many times when kids express an alternative path or a skill or demonstrate intuitive abilities and are told by their parents to not promote those and not to follow that path because that they would not be accepted by mainstream society.
Right. And I'm sure so many people listening have dealt with that as well. And it's sad when fear discourages curiosity. And it's possible to be safe and healthy in exploring different cultures and practices that one may not have been raised with, that may be different from one's own culture. And I'd like to think that as we develop as a society, as a global society in the 21st century, some of those walls of fear will start to dissipate, and people can more freely explore with less fear. But that level of curiosity is something that people should always hold on to. And even when people are discouraged by their parents, by their family, in their practices, I think it's possible to make some concessions to satisfy the family without completely giving into that. I have a lot of people, young people, get a hold of me who say, my family won't let me practice alternative spirituality or anything besides an Abrahamic faith. What do I do? And I say, well, I think you should keep it internal and still do research and still do minor practices. But meditation is key. Reading is key. Researching. You don't have to perform a large ritual every full moon necessarily. You can do something very small. So I think there are ways that people can adapt and modify their explorations.
Did your initial research into these various paths and practices start by reading, or did you find people of like mind and practice together?
Like a lot of younger people, it actually came from cinema, from the movies. That's kind of where my initial interests arose. So I saw The Craft and Practical Magic and Little Buddha and other very mystical and magical films, and Charmed TV show. So that kind of jumped me into the alternative spirituality movement. And from there, I started doing a lot of reading and research, and then also interacting with people who are more seasoned than I.
And your sense about energy, your empathic abilities, how did they first manifest for you?
When I was in high school, about 16 years old or so, I was starting to hang out with people who were a bit unsavory, as a lot of people do at that time in their life. And I would also have a tendency to be very super social. I'm not quite as social these days, but every day after high school, I would go and socialize with one group or another and really put my energy, spread it very thin among lots of people, different groups and crowds, and also kind of adopt different beliefs or humors or practices in each social group. So I was really spreading myself too thin in hindsight. But I remember one occasion where I had a bit of a mental breakdown in high school during in between classes, where the energy was just too much to handle. I was crying and couldn't handle being around people at all anymore, and I didn't know why. I didn't know what was going on. So I walked down the block, a few blocks away, to the home of a spiritual elder, the mother of a friend of mine who now lives in Alaska. And she had been advising me on alternative spiritual practices for a few months before that, when I had met her. But she said to me, you're obviously an empath. And I said, I don't know what that means. And she explained to me that an empath is somebody who experiences higher amounts of empathy than is considered average or normal. And she explained to me the ins and outs of emotional energy and how these energies can naturally be absorbed by people who are highly empathic. And it can sometimes push them out of their bodies and make them feel like their spirit is caving in. And it can cause all sorts of difficulties and challenges and ailments, which, of course, ride alongside one's own internal landscape. So that's what was happening to me, and it was very clear. And so at that point, I began studying emotions and empathy and psychicism more and more after that point.
Were you familiar with the character of Counselor Troy on the Star Trek series?
It's funny. I never got into Star Trek, but as soon as I started writing this empathy book 6 years ago, I quickly became familiar with Deanna Troi and with Jem, the empath character from one of the early episodes. And so I actually watched some of those episodes as part of my research, sitting in the bathtub, drinking wine, watching Star Trek, you know, like having research.
That's wonderful research, absolutely. It's interesting how the portrayal of Counselor Deanna Troi, a Betazoid or a Betazed, was given as an introduction to a lot of people who said, you know something, I feel like that sometimes, and sort of gave them the identity of what an empath is all about.
Right. And I credit Carlin McLaren, who is an author and I believe a psychotherapist, and she's with Sounds True Books, as popularizing the term empath as a descriptive term for an individual in the late 80s, early 90s. And of course, Star Trek was before that. But that really did start to awaken people through, again, cinema, through media, so people could say, hey, I'm kind of like that. I'm kind of like this character. Where did this come from?
And maybe began saying, maybe I'm not crazy. Maybe these feelings I'm experiencing are natural and normal for me. And we'll talk about more about the empath's traits with our wonderful guest, Raven Digitalis, author of the new book, Esoteric Empathy, A Magical and Metaphysical Guide to Emotional Sensitivity, after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
They say that car crashes happen in slow motion. The reality is that crashes happen fast. There's no time to think and no time to check if your child is in the right car seat. Car crashes are a leading killer of children 1 to 13. Are your kids in the right seat for their age and size? Don't think you know. Know you know. Get more info at safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Every Tuesday on Living with Moxie, join Shefali Burns and Donna Martouge in conversations designed to take you to the next level, where we highlight ideas, resources, and strategies that provide you with the leverage you require to meet and exceed your business and personal goals. Each week on Living with Moxie, we will lead conversations related to success, achievement, fulfillment, and extraordinary, vibrant living. Are you ready to live with Moxie? Join us.
More than 1 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Raven Digitalis, author of the new book, Esoteric Empathy, A Magical and Metaphysical Guide to Emotional Sensitivity. So, Raven, prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about empaths and the traits of empaths. Let's talk a little more about those traits. In your book, you provide some checklists of these traits. How would our listeners and your readers know that they are truly empaths?
I should first say that everybody has some amount of empathy. That's just part of life as a human, or even as an animal, and some would argue even as a plant. So empathy is a very natural and normal part of the human experience. Empathy can be described as the experience of emotionally stepping into another person or animal or just another or environment, another reality, emotionally merging with another emotion, which is external. So if you notice yourself talking to somebody and they scratch their chin, and then suddenly you find yourself scratching your chin, well, that's the scientific occurrence of contagion. That's the mirror neurons at work mimicking the other person unconsciously in order to bond, in order to form an empathic bond on an unconscious level. So a lot of the time, empathy occurs on an unconscious level. Empathy strictly implies emotion, though. So if I'm around somebody who's feeling very nervous and agitated, my own heart might start to beat and palpitate faster, and I'll absorb that experience. So it's up to me to realize that that's occurring and what to do with those energies and with that experience. So for somebody to identify as an empath means that they experience empathy at a much higher or more frequent rate than what is considered average or normal. And just like with any label, people can choose to take on a label or not to. Just like with psychicism, everybody's psychic. That's just part of functioning. That's how we function as a species and how other species function as well. It's a very natural and normal thing. But if somebody experiences psychic premonition and different types of psychic phenomena on an everyday, consistent, overloaded basis, then they could easily consider themselves a psychic. So everybody's an empath to one degree or another. But to call oneself an empath is kind of to claim one's power. Everybody's a developing empath, I would say.
Now, to the point you were just making, is there a difference between being empathic and being psychic, and are the two traits mutually exclusive?
I don't think the two traits are mutually exclusive. For a lot of people, they will experience a lot of empathy and little psychicism. For others, they'll experience a lot of psychicism and a little bit of empathy. There are some people who experience high amounts of both, and that can be extremely overwhelming, and I've met a few people like that. But for the most part, I think emotional psychicism or empathy and mental psychicism, or just, you know, psychicism in general, they kind of are like a scale. With empathy on one side of the scale and traditional psychicism on the other. So when one is increased, the other is decreased. That's what I've found through my experience. And sometimes if my empathy is very low, my psychicism will be increased. But it's different for everybody, really. Everybody has a different constitution. And like I said, I consider empathy to be emotional psychicism, though it is completely natural and normal.
So informational psychicism.
Yes, so
does,
I think...
Does that get enhanced then as the emotional psychicism declines?
I do believe so. From my experiences, it does. Again, it might be different for others, but I know for me, if I'm feeling extremely empathetic and just kind of living by my emotion with every interaction and experiencing the emotion, I'm less mentally acute. I'm less mentally perceptive and therefore less psychically perceptive.
Okay. I understand the connection you're making. So that checklist that you have of empathic traits, please share some of those with our listeners.
Yeah, so some of those traits are the tendency to absorb or become the emotions around you, the ability to relate to a wide variety of people and perspectives, difficulty in distinguishing one's emotions from others, having an emotional depth that seems unusual or unconventional, a generally kind and easygoing, compassionate personality, the ability to communicate with anybody on their level, regardless of who they are, and also frequently mirroring other people's mannerisms and expressions and even accents, usually unconsciously. And also if friends and even perfect strangers feel like they can tell you anything, that's a sign of an empath. An empathic connection.
Now, what is the energy that an empath puts out that enables others to say, this is a person I can talk to and trust?
Generally, it's a display of genuine concern and understanding, and that creates trust. Some people can negatively utilize this sort of thing to manipulate others, but empaths, as a general rule, are very kind and compassionate and really want to help make a positive difference in other people's lives, so they would never do that. But some people have kind of learned to manipulate that realm. I think what makes people really open up is just sensing, like, it's okay, it's safe. This person is safe. I can tell them these things and they're not going to hate me. They're not going to spread gossip about me. It's safe.
Now, are there subtle cues that empaths give off rather than just demonstrating compassion and being good-natured, etc.? Are there subtle cues or subtle energy cues that are also given?
I think empaths naturally mirror other people on a physical level as well, like with the mirror neurons being more pronounced. So if somebody stands a certain way, the empath will stand a certain way to try to unconsciously try to experience their reality and their perspectives, kind of stepping into that person's reality. So that trust, I think, is established through both body language and through verbal communications. Oftentimes there's a lot of respect that's given. If a person feels very respected and like they're being listened to and heard and valued, then they'll feel more prone to open up and realize that it's a safe zone. So also, along with increased emotional sensitivity, empaths also often have increased physical sensitivity, like light sensitivity. It's very difficult to be under fluorescent lights for a lot of empaths, for example. A lot of empaths have increased sensitivity toward physical pain and other sensory input, scents and sounds and textures even. So I believe the other senses are enhanced when empathy is enhanced.
Now, you had mentioned some of those traits, like being able to have enhanced sense of pain and sensitivity to light. What are some of the other upsides and downsides of being an empath?
On an upside, empathy is, I believe, propelling our species and the world in general into a place of higher consciousness, deeper compassion, the ability to create positive change for those around us, because every little empathic interaction, even if it seems small, still has an echo, a ripple, and encourages others to be more empathetic, because it feels so good to feel that trust in others and feel empathically safe with others. If we can understand other people's realities without dismissing them for one prejudice or another, we can actually work to help them, and the world just becomes a better place because of empathy. And this is important to keep in mind, especially when a person feels like empathy is a curse. It's not. There are times when being an empath or experiencing extreme empathy feels a lot like a curse, like a very negative experience, because it is frequent for empaths to absorb the emotional energies around them and not know what to do with it, to even not know where one's own energy and emotions begins or ends and another's begins. So it's up to us to come to a place of empowerment in our empathy and learn it for what it is. And I've written this book as a guide for people who are empathic already, but want to explore it and want to learn how to control it and what to do with all these emotions. It's difficult for me to hear so many empaths say, I wish I wasn't this empathic. Wish I wasn't an empath, because it's too painful. I don't like to feel what everybody else is feeling. I don't like to see behind the scenes emotionally. I don't like to see through people's masks and question everything. And, you know, I do understand that pain, but at the same time, we ourselves are deeply emotional beings. So even when we experience a lot of emotions from outside of ourselves, we are still deeply emotional. We are a well of emotion. And it's tempting to want to shut off those abilities when it seems to be too much. But that's really not the answer. It's all about controlling it. Just like with psychic abilities, or just like with any power that we have as humans, we need to learn how to control them. Just like with any gift. You know, if a person is meant to be a musician and keeps getting all of this inspiration but doesn't know what to do with it, they're going to go kind of crazy if they don't have the outlet to express those energies and those inspirations that they receive. So just the same with empaths. We have to learn what works for us and what helps us evolve emotionally and empathetically to become the best empaths we can be, because we can be very empowered in this path and not always see ourselves as a victim, because that victim mentality and victim consciousness is dangerous, and life is too short to just give in to the negative.
And our world is in desperate need of people who are truly empathic and have those gifts and can bring them to others, because without them, I don't know what our future looks like. My guest is Raven Digitalis. He's the author of the new book, Esoteric Empathy, a... excuse me. Wow, a magical and metaphysical guide to emotional sensitivity. Raven, please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and your book.
You can find out more about me at my website, ravendigitalis.com. That's one word, lowercase, raven like the bird, and digitalis like the plant, which is digital with an IS at the end, .com, or facebook.com/ravendigitalis.
And we'll be back with more of Raven and Esoteric Empathy after these words from the Om Times Radio Network. Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
I'm Paul George of the Indiana Pacers. When I was six, my days were spent playing basketball. When I was six, my dream was to make it to the NBA. When I was six, my mom had a stroke. So I want you to learn to spot a stroke fast. F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, time to call 911. I'm Paul George. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Raven Digitalis, author of the book Esoteric Empathy, a magical and metaphysical guide to emotional sensitivity. You had mentioned earlier in the second segment about neuron mirroring, something that science has shown exists. What else does science say about empathy?
It's interesting because in psychotherapy and other scientific fields, empathy is a relatively new field of study. So now you see all of these books emerging in the scientific field in different subfields about empathy and what it means. So in my book, I actually have a chapter that really goes in depth about the science of empathy. And I know it's a little bit dry for some readers, but I need to really explore the scientific sides of empathy before I get into the metaphysical sides. I think it's important for readers who are empaths to have a well-rounded understanding of what they're experiencing. I think it's easier if we understand what we are experiencing on a physiological and biological scientific level, because that can help us emotionally step back from the experience to say, okay, this is what's happening. Mirror neurons are firing in my brain. This is part of my brain. I'm experiencing emotional contagion right now. And these other scientific terms that are very real parts of our experience can help us to understand the metaphysical side of things. Because once we understand one side, we can approach the energetic and metaphysical side of empathy with less superstition and with less questioning. It's good to become grounded in the physical reality of the experience of empathy. So the big things scientifically are emotional contagion and the mirror neurons when it comes to the empathic experience. The mirror neurons are located in our brain as physical cells that actually tell our brain to mirror what we're experiencing in reality. So again, when we see somebody playing with their hair and we start playing with our hair without realizing it, we're experiencing that emotional contagion by way of the mirror neurons firing. So it's very much a scientific experience that also has naturally energetic implications as well.
Now, before there was a deeper understanding of empathy in its natural state, how many people who were empathic wound up in psychiatric facilities and undergoing intense counseling for what they were experiencing?
Yeah, I think that has been a large occurrence before empathy was really understood. It was less than 100 years ago that empathy as a term really took root in our vocabulary in the English-speaking world. So it's kind of a new thing to try to understand. Early on with therapy and other physical medicines, only the physical body was being looked at. The brain does this, so let's diagnose it like this. But it's actually deeper than that. Everybody's emotional experience throughout life shapes them, informs them, and everybody has a different sensitivity and different gifts in different areas. So if we consider the whole person, we can more easily work with them physically, psychotherapeutically, and spiritually.
Absolutely. Now, how does empathy come to play in spiritual and metaphysical practice?
Well, I believe that emotions are the fuel for spiritual and magical experiences. I think that when a person experiences mystical states of consciousness, their emotions are opened up to the divine, to the universe, to however they see God or gods or what have you. It's all the same energy, undeniably. And when a person is able to come into a place of deeper compassion and wants to make a difference in the world, that's empathy at work. Metaphysically, we are energetic beings. We're physical beings, but we're also energetic beings, as any metaphysical practitioner understands. And the emotional body is just one of those many levels of our constitutions as spiritual beings. And we need to understand not only our mind and how we think, but also how our emotions function and why they function the way they do. It's wise when a person can understand that they're reacting a certain way to a certain situation based on their past experiences or even based on their past life experiences. And if we can step back and see how our minds function, we also have the capability of stepping back and seeing how our emotions function. And that's one thing that I really promote in my book and give some how-to steps of how to step back a little bit and become more aware, become an observer. It's so easy with emotions to identify as that emotion. I'm sad. I'm happy. I'm this, I'm that. But in reality, our body, our mind, our brain, our emotions are feeling these things. We, as a self, are much deeper than that. We are beyond our emotions. We are not our emotions. We are not our brain. We're not our mind. We are spirit. We are spirit housed in a physical body that has an energetic constitution about it as well. So if we can bring awareness to these different levels of functioning, we can more easily identify our emotions and more easily identify the emotions of others that may be attached to us.
Okay, and with reference to people who are highly empathic, how can empaths protect themselves from some of the negative effects that may be experienced?
There are so many ways that empaths and psychics and people in general can protect themselves. For empaths in particular, there are a number of stones and herbs and tools and charms and different magical items. Some would call magical, some would call metaphysical, that can really help us in our daily life. For example, if I'm feeling very overwhelmed, extremely overwhelmed by emotions on a certain day, whether it's mine or others, I'm going to put on or carry some black tourmaline. Because,
I don't leave home without it.
Yeah. It is a big protector.
Absolutely.
And if I'm feeling like I need a little bit more radiant energy, maybe I'll use citrine. And these are just stones that anybody can use. But in my book, Esoteric Empathy, I really dive into other tools from different cultures, from everything from Vedic Hinduism to hoodoo and witchcraft and Wicca and other cultures that employ charms and tools that we can use. For emotions in particular, I also have a lot of symbols and different symbolic pictures that a person can use on charms or as a focal tool during meditation, in addition to the different herbal and gemstone and animal-based tools that I encourage for empaths who are feeling overwhelmed. Even something as simple as taking a salt bath or rubbing salt on oneself in the shower can do a lot energetically. And it's just so interesting how the mind and the body and the emotions are interconnected so deeply. If we focus on one, we naturally help heal the other systems. Sometimes if a person is feeling extremely energetically overloaded and they haven't taken a shower for a week, I'll say, first go take a shower.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, physical cleanliness does a lot for mental and emotional cleanliness. So it's just little things like that. If a person isn't sleeping very well, you know, and they're experiencing extreme amounts of empathy that are making them feel suicidal, I'm like, okay, why don't you try to get your sleep cycle in order and then think about some daily practice like yoga and meditation that you can integrate into your day and then come back to me and tell me how you feel. Just little adjustments that might seem insignificant can actually go a long way empathetically.
Now, in energy work, we talk a lot about grounding. What advice do you give about grounding?
So it's very easy for empaths who live in their emotional bodies to forget to come back to ground. So another thing that my original spiritual teacher, Sonia, taught me back in high school is to ground yourself constantly as an empath. So that was one of my first empathic lessons. So I would often lay on the ground and just imagine myself sinking into the earth beneath me. That's not always possible for everybody in the daily routine. But visualization is always there, is always available. If a person's feeling extremely overwhelmed at work and has a very like social job like retail, they can always take a quick break in the bathroom, do some deep breathing and visualization to recharge. There's always an option. We're not victims to what we're experiencing, even if we're overloaded and overwhelmed. But back in high school, this teacher, she helped me make a bracelet that I wore hidden on my upper arm. And this bracelet was Velcro and leather and had stones glued inside of it. It was a grounding bracelet. So it had these little polished gemstones like hematite and obsidian and other grounding stones in it that would allow me to stick it on real quick and ground down instantly. And little techniques like that really go a long way.
And simple visualization of people who are good at visualization, of just seeing themselves connected to the earth and rooted to the earth like a tree, I find that effective for me myself.
It really goes a long way. Simple visualization and moving of the body through yoga can have a profound effect.
And breathing techniques like pranayama also. My guest tonight is Raven Digitalis. He's the author of the book Esoteric Empathy. And we'll be back with Raven and more of the life of an empath and how to deal with empathic challenges that you may encounter after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
Ranger Station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now. There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
1 in 7 Americans will struggle with addiction during their lifetime. Want to know how you can help? Go to heretolisten.com for tips and tools to help turn addiction around. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Raven Digitalis, author of Esoteric Empathy, a Magical and Metaphysical Guide to Emotional Sensitivity. So we were talking a little bit about techniques that empaths can use to protect themselves from the negative effects that they may be experiencing. You also offer a wonderful series of exercises and practices, including some wonderful Kabbalistic meditations. Please share some of that with our listeners.
I really went for a universal approach with my Esoteric Empathy book. My other books in the past have been more focused on paganism and magic in particular, but Esoteric Empathy is available for anybody and anyone and everyone who identifies as an empath or who is extremely emotionally sensitive and wants to know what to do with it. There's a little something for everybody in the book. And still, even when I think back to the 6 years it took to write, create, and edit this book, I can't think of a single other thing that I would say or include in the text itself. And I can't say that about my other books. This one really has different approaches for every type of person, and I'm so proud of it. And it's really a collaborative effort as well, because empathy is naturally a collaborative thing. So I thank my editors and art department and publicist and everybody who has helped create this book. You'll see a lot of quotes from others in this book as well, which I love to include, all these different perspectives as well as those different practices, like you mentioned. So I'll include everything from something Kabbalistic to something alchemical to something based on the aura or the chakras or in mudras. I have many different types of practices that anybody can pick up and immediately put to use as an empath. Some of these are ritualistic and they're a little bit longer in nature. Others are very immediate in nature, like the pranayama that we mentioned, and grounding techniques and shielding techniques that are more immediate in nature. So a person can really take it to any level that they wish. If a person is highly empathic and really is feeling overloaded and wants to get that under control, they can choose to devote to a half hour or an hour of practice for, say, a week every day, just to get their shields up and hone their energy and get to know their mind and their emotions. Or a person can pick it up and learn about a new herb they can put in their medicine bag to carry around, which will help them, or a new elixir or tincture that they can utilize. So I really try to appeal to people of every path in this book, not just witches, not just pagans, not just Kabbalists, but everybody. And in each chapter, a reader will find both a chapter meditation and a longer practical practice, such as an elixir for emotional relief, or connecting with different deities. Of course, if a person identifies, like with, say, only the Christian God, that's okay too. They can skip that section. And one will find how to work with clientele if they are a healer themselves, or if they practice empathic healing or psychotherapy or other modalities of empathically assisting others. There's an exercise for that. There's also an exercise working with the European god Baphomet, which some people will find really appealing and others won't really vibrate with it so much. So I'm proud of this well-rounded approach, and I hope it serves readers well.
Now, you also chart how empathic types correspond to different earth energies and alignment. Please explain.
There's this belief that I've encountered throughout my empathic research, especially in the psychic and New Age spheres, that promotes different types of empaths. So some people identify as a crystal empath, an animal empath, a physical empath, and others. The list goes on and on. And my argument in one section of this book is that there's only one type of empath, and that's an emotional empath, because empathy itself implies emotion, strictly. Now, if a person is, for example, experiencing the physical pains of another person, they would be more easily classified as a medical intuitive, which I believe falls under the earth element, like you mentioned. The psychic realm, I believe, falls under the air element for the mind. Empathy itself falls under water for the emotions. The ability to create change or hands-on healing or extreme Reiki or massage therapy ability, I believe, fall under fire as an element. So I have this little map in one of the first sections of the book where people can map where they are, like as their primary gifts, where their primary gifts are located. So for me, I'm primarily in the water area is where I would put myself. Another person might put themselves empathically closer to between water and earth, which in a neo-pagan system would be northwest. So a person can map out where they are energetically and where their gifts lie. And this is all laid out in one of the practical exercises in the book.
Do you also map astrological types to empaths?
It's funny because a lot of people mistake being a water sign for being more highly empathic. It's actually a bit more complicated than that. It's true that water signs are notoriously very empathetic. Personally, I'm a Leo, I'm a fire sign, but I have a Pisces moon in tropical modern astrology. So I could say that Pisces moon being a water sign is connected, and it definitely has some play in it. But we're complicated creatures. I mean, a person's astrology is just kind of a blueprint for their general character and who they are. And I would say synchronizes based on past life experiences. A person comes into a certain astrological configuration based on their past experiences of their soul. But it's not there for us to feel victim to. You know, I am not going to say that I can go out and be a bastard because I have a Scorpio rising, which I do. So, I mean, I have a tendency to get feisty if I'm feeling too overloaded or threatened in any way. But that doesn't give me the right to be like that. It just gives me another challenge to work on to invoke compassion into that configuration. So astrology does play a role, but it's not the only role.
Yeah. Now, you talked about compassion, and that's one of the most beautiful attributes of empaths. But for many of us, it's hard to draw the line between compassion for those worthy of it and those who are constantly needy. What advice do you offer to keep balance in this?
Empaths are notoriously taken advantage of if they don't have a healthy amount of discernment and discretion. And that's something that I really like to promote for empaths, is to be very discerning and not just believe everything that they're told or that everybody says. It's very easy to do that. Empaths can be very gullible if they're not controlled in their abilities. Empaths are easily manipulated and taken advantage of, because if a person is prone to using others or taking advantage of them, they will more easily gravitate toward empaths, because empaths are more willing to give that emotional energy. And I've experienced that a lot in my early years. And so many empathic people I know have done the same. But it's one of those things we need to take as a learning experience. And honestly, some empaths are in terribly abusive relationships or really unhealthy friendships or connections or occupations or social circles because they feel obligated to give their energy to those who feel they need it or want it. So when a person is able to empower themselves as an empath, they can step back and see where their energy is going. So by monitoring one's own energy and seeing where it's going, and if it's actually being productive and actually helping make a difference positively, then we can analyze our experiences further and make changes if we need to.
Can empathy be switched on and off by using intention, and is there an inherent danger in doing that?
That's a great question, and it's one that comes up in a lot of forums, empathic forums online and whatnot. I don't think empathy can be shut off, but it can be manipulated. And what I mean by that is that a person, and this does happen, a person might be very empathetic and have some bad experiences and then want to shut it off, and might turn into extreme drinking and drug use and extreme video gaming, or locking themselves in their house and never wanting to leave. A person might become extremely defensive because they don't want anybody to get to know them emotionally because it feels dangerous. So there are all these things that these negative ways that highly empathic people can react, which seem like solutions at the time, but are actually very unhealthy and spiritually detrimental. So, but it's never too late. I think that even if a person does enter that sort of behavioral coping model, I think they can work themselves out of it safely as well. And I do give some techniques in my book for that. And many other authors who explore empathy give some wonderful techniques for safely reawakening and utilizing empathy. I would argue that someone who's very empathetic won't become a terrible, callous, destructive person, though. They won't start to cause harm to others, because there's always a part of the self that realizes that's wrong.
Absolutely. My wonderful guest this evening, Raven Digitalis, his new book, Esoteric Empathy, A Magical and Metaphysical Guide to Emotional Sensitivity. Raven, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
Well, thank you everybody for listening, and I hope I've reached some empaths tonight, and feel free to reach out to me anytime if you would like to just say hello, or would like a tarot reading or spiritual consultation. You can find me on my website, ravendigitalis.com, or at facebook.com/ravendigitalis. And thank you all for the support, and I wish you the best. Namaste. Blessed be.
And the same to you, Raven. Thank you for joining us tonight, and thanks to everyone for listening to Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.